to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, July 21st, and you're listening to episode 112. I'm Jason, one of your normal hosts. We also have a special guest co-host again this week, as Rob is still out of the country. We have Mr. Chris Kopack. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jason. How you doing?
Good, man. How's it going?
Not too bad.
Thank you for joining me tonight. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm honored to be here.
So we had I was tweeting and was like, hey, I need a co-host. Everybody tweet me and tell me why you should be the co-host. And we got a bunch of tweets back, and I picked yours because you gave me two arguments I couldn't resist. One, you made fun of Sally Field, which I think is fantastic because I don't really like Sally Field.
Okay.
And two, you were like, but you like me and we're friends, so... Fair arguments, absolutely fair arguments. So,
well, I figured it was the most important facet you would be looking for in a co-host.
It's true, and I was excited too because, a lot of the, like you and I talked about before we started recording, a lot of the people we have on the show are game designers, or publishers, or artists, or specifically tied to the industry in some way. And you're a friend of ours who plays a ton of games, who we hang out with at conventions and such. And that was cool to me to have somebody on that we know who is not explicitly designing games at this point. I think that's cool. I think it's different. So,
yeah, I'm just some guy. I'm just here to talk about games.
Well, like we were saying before too, I think you probably know more about games than I do, and you probably know more about games than a lot of designers do, because I know that you are quite the aficionado, just from playing games with you and also seeing the games that you've played, and also you're a huge fan of Water Balloon Washout, which means you must be a genius when it comes to games.
Right, you're right, absolutely. I mean, that is the pinnacle of my gaming collection right now is Water Balloon Washout. I don't know if I'd call myself an aficionado more than a hoarder. I can't not buy a game when I see it. It's kind of a little bit of a problem, but at the same time, it's fun too.
Yeah, no, I understand. I often have the problem. I've went to enough Gen Cons now and bought enough games that I've never played that I've gotten better. I think my biggest downfall right now is Kickstarter. I get a lot of games off Kickstarter.
Yeah, Kickstarter was a real problem for me. I've kind of trailed off a little bit there, but I've replaced it with a new addiction. Now I'm just constantly buying games from Germany directly, which has been fun at my game nights to bring out these new German games, and they're like, where did you find this?
That's
this isn't
so awesome.
Like, this isn't like Sorry or, Skippo. What is this game?
So you're not an aficionado, you're DOS aficionado.
There you go. Yeah.
That's whatever awesome. I didn't realize that you were buying, that you were ordering some games directly from Germany. That's really cool.
I kind of caught the bug from a couple of my other friends, Matt Wolf and Tiffany Bonson. They were out trying to out-hipster each other at Origins, trying to find these niche kind of games, and then I somehow kind of caught the bug, so I've been kind of trailing along with them, saying, ooh, that looks cool, I want to buy that too.
I still think the coolest game I saw anyone buy at Origins was the one you bought, the game with the squishy animals.
Oh, Fun Farm. The really deep strategic Euro, it's real heavy, No, it's none of those things. It's squishy animals and dice and cards, and it's chaos, and just it's an awesome fun time.
But I think that's what makes it so hipster, is it's not any of the normal things you'd expect from a game, right? You're like, this looks like a kid's game, but it's awesome.
Right, yeah. It's and that's kind of something I've seen as of late, that the whole label of kids game is kind of detrimental in a sense, because there's a lot of really just fun games that are they're simple enough for a kid to pick up, but that doesn't make them any less of a good game,
Right. I feel you, man, because that's, I know Water Balloon Washout sometimes gets pinholed as being more of a kids game, but it's not designed as a kids game. It's designed as an adult game that kids can the kids can play too, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's huge for the hobby right now, is to have these accessible things that, you know, anybody can play.
Right.
You know, if a lot of my collection is kind of lighter stuff like that, because I want to have something that I can break out at a family get together.
Right.
That people who never touch games at all will still be able to pick up on and really have fun.
Right. And I have the same issue, because, you know, there are some of the heavier style, even sometimes darker games, you know, that I really enjoy, but I don't get to play them that often, because the game group that I continually play with, the people that aren't Rob, are into the lighter fare. So, you know, I kind of have to run that border. Like, Settlers of Catan and Stone Age are about as heavy as it gets, which are, I mean, they're Euros, right? But yeah. I mean, they're gateway Euros. They're not like Euros, you know? It's not like you're turning cubes into more cubes or something in those games.
Right. I've kind of had a similar situation, because I have a game night that I run at my job, that I got clearance to run there on a weekly basis. And I just, you know, invite all the employees in the company to sit in and play. And it's been good to get new players into the mix, but I kind of have to keep resetting the difficulty level a little bit until the new people can kind of get up to speed.
Right.
But it's good to be able to have some heavier stuff that I can kind of push the boundaries a little bit. So that's always been good. And yeah, I have a lot of Euros in my collection too. And for a while there, I was really big into playing them. And lately, like I said, it just hasn't been the thing. And, I just got together with some friends over the weekend, and they wanted to play Caverna. And I'm like, okay, sure. And it nearly broke my brain. I equated it to, like, exercise and muscle mass, and that my Euro muscles in my brain had atrophied, and I just had nothing left.
Right. Yeah, I could totally see that. You know, I mean, I can totally see that. Like, having, like, played lighter games and then sitting down and being like, all right, let's play a real, real heavy game. And you're like, oh, crud.
Yeah.
How do I do this?
Wait, there's way too many choices. I can't. What? No.
It's time for some analysis paralysis.
Yep. No, I'm literally paralyzed on the floor. I can't move. This is not good.
Oh, that's funny. So that sounds like some of the stuff you've been playing lately. Is there any other games you've been playing lately you want to mention or give shout-outs to?
A new one I just picked up, thanks to a group order with Tiffany, is Port Royal. It's from Pegasus Spiele. It's by Alexander Pfister. It's really accessible. It's basically a push-your-luck game. You draw cards from a deck, and you keep flipping cards over, and the cards have, like, pirate ships on them, or they have people that would work in a harbor town. And if you ever reveal two ships of the same color, then your turn is over. So you're trying to get more of those cards out there, because the more unique colors of ships you have out, the more of those cards you've revealed that you can take, you can purchase, or you can just take to get money.
Right.
So it's this really nice balance of, well, I could stop, but I'm going to go ahead and flip another card.
Right. That's cool. That sounds interesting. I'll have to check that out. Is that one of the ones you got directly from Germany?
Yeah. I think it's, I'm not sure if it's been picked up by American publisher or not. I would have to imagine it is. I'm just not aware of it. But.
Cool. That sounds interesting. Is that a portable one?
Yep. It's one that's going to make its way into my bag of filler.
Cool. Yeah, we'll have to check that out at Gen Con then.
Yeah, definitely.
Love to give that a try.
Yeah.
Well, hey, cool. Before we move on, I want to. There's a couple shout outs I want to give that I was thinking of earlier. One, today, AJ Pifurio's Kickstarter for Van Ryder Games launched for a hostage negotiator.
Yeah, I was just checking that out earlier. That looks really slick.
Yeah, it's, man, like, it is, it's some people were rightly calling it the gateway solo game. Because it's like, it's, I was one of the people that was fortunate enough to play test it over the last year or two for him. Mm-hmm. And man, it's just fantastic. It's so much fun. You know, anything that I ever would not have liked about a solo game, that this would fix anything. I mean, it's just, it's so good. It's really good. And AJ puts out good stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, it looks like he's really nailed the theme on that one. I mean, I was watching a video playthrough of it, and it's just dripping with the theme. I mean, you definitely feels like you're a negotiator.
And let me tell you, that game, when you're playing it, is stressful. You know, I mean, they're just, the hostages are just cubes, right? At least that's what they were in the prototype. I think he's got like a stretch goal where they would be meeples. But even as just cubes, man, I'll tell you, like, it's kind of like Pandemic, right? Where, in, you know, with the cubes, like, there's just these cubes on the board, but as they start to go away, you start to be like, oh no, it gets real tense in that game because it's all you. And it's all you trying to save these hostages. And it's really well balanced, but it's kind of a ride, like, getting through it. Every new version of the game that I got to try, I liked better and better. So I was a quick early adapter on that one.
Nice.
I knew it was coming and I knew it would be awesome. There was another game I saw that went out to Kickstarter a couple days ago, I think, from a designer friend of ours, Isaac Shalov. Called Chronosphere, and it looks interesting. I haven't tried it yet, so I can't speak to what it's like to play, but I've heard it got some good reviews, and it's like a twist on a trivia game, where you're trying to move some stuff around in order of chronology for different things. It looks pretty cool. I'm interested to check it out some more. I just haven't got a chance to yet, but that's on Kickstarter too, and Isaac's a friend of ours. He's never been on this show, but he's been on Something from Nothing, so it's like to give everybody some love as we talk about that stuff. So
nice.
Cool. So hey, let's let's talk about a feature here. We this week you and I talked, and we kind of went back and forth to see what a good feature would be for us to talk about. And I will let you introduce it here.
I had to rack my brain a little bit because, you know, I'm obviously an expert at podcasting because I've been on, let's see, this is my first. And the idea that popped into my head was goals and preparation for attending a con. We're kind of smack dab in the middle of con season right now, right between Origins and Gen Con. Yeah. Is it Gen Con time yet?
Oh, no. It's so close. Yet. I got my badge in the mail. I saw you got yours too. I was super excited.
Yeah. It's something that this will be my fifth convention I'll be attending this year. So I've done three Origins, and this will be my second Gen Con. And while it's a really awesome experience, and there's just so much great stuff going on, it's historically been kind of a tricky time for me, understanding how to prepare myself for it, how to get in the right mindset, and what kind of traps to watch out for. So I kind of thought that might be a relatively okay topic to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's great because, you know, we've talked so much about, as designers, oh, we're getting ready for this convention, I'm trying to set up these pitches and trying to do this and that. Like, but we've never actually talked about what's it like for anyone else going. And, you know, for many years, that was me. Like, that was just one of those guys going. I didn't have a podcast. I wasn't trying to pitch games to publishers. I was just going because I was a gamer who liked to have fun. And conventions, man, like, as fun as they are, they can be a stressful thing, right? I mean...
Yeah, it's something that people who may have, you know, anxiety issues or something like that, there can be a lot of trigger moments that can pop up. And they definitely popped up for me in my first con. Going to Origins as my first con was a little tricky because I just went in blind. I had no idea what was going on.
Right.
And I couldn't even find the convention center. Now, I was staying at the Hyatt, which is connected to the convention center, but I couldn't find it. I got myself so confused. I was like, I just keep walking. Is it here? So it's stuff like that, you know, figuring out logistics, figuring out where your hotel is in relation to the convention center, taking a look at the map of the hall, and just kind of getting a game plan in mind of, okay, these are the things that I want to go do. One thing that I've kind of been trying this year as an experiment, in years past, I've been, you know, really heavy on scheduled events. And this year I've been trying, I'm not scheduling much of anything.
Yep.
There are a couple things that I've scheduled for Gen Con. One, some game building podcast.
Hey, all right.
Couple of weirdos. but no real scheduled games. And I'm hoping that will give me some more flexibility.
You know, I can say, man, on that note, like, the longer I go to conventions, I basically don't schedule anything anymore. I'm booked for our thing, like for our show that you're going to,
right,
and a Dice Masters tournament, because I had to book ahead of time if I wanted to get into that. And that's it. Because the longer I go to conventions, the more I just want to just kind of go with the convention, where it takes me, you know?
Yeah, and I think it served its purpose for me, the scheduled events concept, because it helped me get acclimated to, you know, I'm in this massive convention hall.
Right.
I don't know what's going on. And it gave me kind of like waypoints, you know. It's like, I know I'm going to go here at this time and I'm going to play this game, and there's going to be somebody there to teach it. So I think from that aspect, it's helpful.
Absolutely.
To start off with scheduled events.
Yep. I agree.
But I would get into this mindset where I would see some other game going on, or I'd see some people that I knew going to play something in open gaming, and I'd be like, "Oh, I'm missing out on the cool stuff over there. Oh, but this game's cool too." I don't know. That's another area that, you know, there's so much going on at these conventions. Like, Gen Con just blew my mind last year.
Yeah.
There's just so much going on. And you kind of have to go in with the mindset of, you're not going to see it all. You're not going to do it all. You just pick up what you can, you know, just always be open to something that just pops up. Which, you know, that's definitely something I'm trying to focus more on this year.
Well, yeah, I know last year because I first met you last year at Origins, and let me back you up. Origins is, like, completely laid out terribly. like, I was also staying on the Hyatt, and you're like, well, I'm still walking. Where is the convention center? Like, why are they so obsessed with hallways in Ohio? I mean, it's just, I don't understand it. I still, like, when we went there this year, I still had to take my time, like, paying attention to where we were going, and I still made one or two wrong turns, like, and it's not, the sad thing is the convention center is not even that big. The hallways are, like, twice the size of the convention center. And it's attached, like, I don't get it, but that said, I went to Gen Con first, right? So when I went to Origins, I was like, this is lame, there's nothing happening here. Because I got there Wednesday, and somebody said to me, it might have been Eric Leith said, the only people that think Origin starts on Wednesday are Origins. And luckily that's where I met you, though, because I think you were hanging out with Eric maybe, or someone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could see going from Origins to switching over to Gen Con and being like, holy crap, there's so much stuff here. There's so many shiny objects.
You're talking about going from like 14,000 people up to, you know, it's going to break 50,000 this year at Gen Con for sure.
It's crazy. And I think one of the things I like the most about being unprepared is unscheduled, I guess, is like you said, being able to go to just those pickup games of like, oh, you guys are going to go play this? I'm going to go. I'll go play this too, you know? And and it leaves us free, because, I mean, last year at Gen Con, there was a good group of us that hung out quite a bit, and we ended up, we all went to dinner. Was that Saturday night? There was like 13 or 14 of us that walked like 12 miles to get to that Mexican restaurant in the middle of nowhere. Remember that?
Yep, because I was the first one there, and I'm like, am I at the right place? Right. No one's here.
Because we all misjudged how stinking far away it was.
Yeah, how are we so bad at distances? We had cell phones, we had technology, but...
Yeah, we just kept walking forever. But I think you kind of had to, because I want to say that was the only place where we could get a reservation for like 13 people. So
yeah, that's definitely something that I treasure from my first con experiences at Origins, because like when I first went to a con, I just, you know, I was one of those people, I was on the Twitter, I had, you know, some people that I was following, that kind of stuff, and then you get to these conventions and just getting to meet these people, and especially getting to meet them after show hours and just hanging out and playing these unpublished games and stuff like that. That's how I've, you know, made all the friends that I've made
right
over the last couple of years. It's like, had I not started doing that, I wouldn't have run into like you guys, or, you know, it's just kind of a, you know, the butterfly effect a little bit, you know, butterfly flaps its wings and then I make all these friends at a convention. But being open to just walking up to a group of people that are playing an unpublished game that, you know, like the unpub group, and it's like, oh, these people are kind of cool. Yeah. Oh, I'll play this. Sure. Yeah.
Well, and that's one cool, like, of groups you could approach, like cold approach. Those, like, the designers in the unpub area are the absolute best, because you're looking for someone to hang out with, and they're looking for someone to hang out with to play their game, right? So, like, you want to play a game, they need a game played. It's like you know, I've met, like, I used to know 20 people that I would see at Gen Con every year. And when I say no, I don't mean, like, was friends with. Like, you know, I, maybe even just 10 people. Like, oh, the same 10 people I would see at Gen Con, say hi to them, and that was about it. And then I started doing the game design stuff and getting in with the unpub crew. And it just exploded, because there are so many people to talk to, and everybody's cool and everybody is friendly and wants to hang out and wants to chat and wants to play games, you know? So,
I think people that are new to the con experience could be, you know, a little uneasy about just, you know, walking up to these people and just hanging out with them. But there's some of the nicest people I've met. Through this hobby and through conventions in general, that, you know, you gotta be open to just whatever pops up, really.
Right. Yeah. And it really is, cause I'm not great at meeting new people. Like, I'm not great at just walking up to people and hanging out. So I've appreciated being able to meet those friends that I can always, like, you know, like when I went to Origins this year, I was able to be like, all right, I'm looking for Chris Kopech. I'm looking for Chevy Dodd. You know, like Rob and I were looking for those people because we knew, like, you know, they're going to be there. They're going to hang out. So,
What was it at last Gen Con? You had tweeted something when you first got there about lines at the registration or something like that.
Yeah, because Rob had forgot to get his. Well, he says that it didn't give him the option to get his badge shipped when he ordered it, but he ordered it the same day I did. So since he's not on the show, I'm just going to call him out and say it was user error. Let's just face it. It was user error.
Rob, I had no part in this. This is all Jason.
We'll see if he listens to the show. If he is listening to the show right now, he just sent me an email swearing at me at work. So, but anyways, so, yeah, we tweeted that we were standing in line because I was like, oh, standing in line with Rob because he needed to get his badge. And you just showed up. You were like, you're like, oh, hey, they're here. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah, because when I'd arrived there, I was like, I'm overwhelmed. There's just this mass of people. It's like, I don't know anybody here. And it's like, oh, Jason and Rob, I know those guys.
Well, and a lot of people there aren't there Thursday, early Thursday like we are. So, Wednesday, wasn't it? That was Wednesday night. A lot of people aren't there Wednesday night. So, yeah, so it can be kind of skimpy trying to find people to hang out with that night.
But
it was, you know, like, talk about reasons to go with the flow, though. The best game that I found at Gen Con last year, one of the best games that I found at Gen Con last year was Las Vegas, which you taught me how to play when we ran into each other.
Speaking of Las Vegas, another German import I got is the expansion to Las Vegas, which
is called Das Vegas.
Yeah. Not now.
It'd be cool if it was called that, though.
It would be cool, but unfortunately, it's just called Las Vegas Boulevard.
Okay.
It's not as cool as Das Vegas. So I'll have to bring that along, and we'll have to reenact last year's Gen Con teaching in Las Vegas.
Definitely. It took me a while to finally get Las Vegas, but I finally did. So yeah, I think that game, and then the other game that I just absolutely fell in love with was Phantom of the Opera, which I've talked about like 1,000 times on this show, but it still is. I think it's the tightest two-player game I've ever played. So, and I got to meet Bruno Cathala, who's my hero. So yeah, that helped sell that too.
I got to take a picture of that faded meeting too.
Yes.
It's like, ooh, I feel like I'm like a photographer following up with these media people. I'm just here taking pictures.
So yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else on this topic we should make sure to hit up. I mean, I think lesson learned is, you know, it can certainly be daunting when you first get to a con, especially if it's your first con or your first Gen Con. Even if you've been to Origins and you go to Gen Con, be prepared to be surprised by how huge it is.
Right.
But, you know, look for people who want to play games. You know, I mean, I think that, like we said, the Unpub group is always a great group to look for, and they're easy to find, especially at night. And a lot of times being on Twitter is also very helpful. That is, other than texting, like, and I don't text with everybody, but with some people, I mean, other than that, even people that I text with, sometimes still Twitter is how we find each other.
It's really kind of surprising how the hobby and the industry is really just kind of latched on to Twitter. It just seems to be, that's the place to be in the know and to keep up with people.
Yep. It was like, I don't know if you were, did you end up going with us to dinner at Origins?
This year?
Yeah. Saturday.
No.
No. Okay. I didn't think so. It was like myself and Jason Tagmeyer and his wife and Rob and a few Chevy and some others. And we were walking on the street, and we ran into Jeremiah Lee, and as we're all walking up, Jeremiah Lee says, "Look, it's my Twitter feed." And I was like, wow, he's right. You know, so I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. And it's almost kind of like a summer camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
It's like every year con season comes around, I was like, oh, I get to see my friends again.
Yep. Yeah, and there are plenty of people, friends of mine, who I only see at Gen Con, you know?
Yeah,
And that's cool. It's been nice going to Origins. And Unpub is also another help for that, because that's a lot of my designer friends that are East Coast that might not ever make it out to anything out this way other than Gen Con or maybe Origins. That's another touch point. So, and I did see you backed the Unpub Kickstarter. Does that mean you're going to to Unpub?
I don't know about that yet. Two cons a year is kind of my limit right now.
Right, and I know it's like that for a lot of people.
I'm not ruling it out, but it's I'm on the fence right now.
Right.
Nothing against Unpub or anything. It's just more, just, you know, financial and
time off work,
that kind of stuff.
And if you're gonna just go to Unpub or Origins, you're gonna have more fun at Origins.
But I would definitely. It's definitely on my radar that I definitely want to get to someday, because it sounds like it's basically all the cool stuff from Origins after hours distilled into a whole entire con.
Yeah, and that's basically what it is. You just sit around and play games with your friends all day. All day you play games with people you don't know for the most part. People come around and try your games. For you, it would be heaven, because you would be able to go around and try like two dozen games by people you know and by people you don't know. And then at night at the hotel, especially, you know, because you already know all the designers, you just hang out with them and play games and stuff. And we played published games, we played unpub games, you know. I mean, it was always a great time. You know, that said, if you had to choose, I could see you choosing Origins. Plus, Origins is like way closer to your house than Baltimore.
It's like 2 hours.
This year we did the Crash Origins one day thing, and that was, I mean, it was a lot of fun, but it was terrible. I mean, we were so drained when we got home.
And you kind of picked the worst day out of Origins to try to do the single day Crash.
Right.
With their new registration system and everything. Yeah. So
with the 2 hours you spent in line.
Yeah, that kind of cut into your quality time.
That it did. But it was a super worthwhile trip because I got to show a game to a publisher. I got to, you know, I got to hang out with people. I mean, we got some good feedback. It was a good time, you know. Yeah. I certainly would do it again. I would just pre-register for my badge and pick it up and get it ahead of time. So,
mm-hmm. I would recommend that.
Cool. Well, I feel like we've done pretty good with that topic here. So let's move ourselves on here to practicing the pitch. Now, we talked ahead of time about this. We don't have any super specific idea for what we're going to do. So we talked about just kind of working together to do a game pitch. If you don't have
considering that I've never done a pitch or any of this kind of stuff before, so it was kind of, hey, let's try this out and see what happens.
So we could try and think of a theme or something, or we could just cheat and we could use Board Gameizer. Are you familiar with Board Gameizer?
I am not familiar.
So Board Gameizer is this website called Board Gameizer.
That's a novel name for a site called Board Gameizer.
Isn't it, though?
It's the same thing.
And it gives you a bunch of different crazy stuff. So I am just kind of flipping through here, looking at some ideas.
Okay.
The theme, one of the themes that just popped up to me that I think is kind of cool is Mammoth's Escape.
Mammoth's Escape. Okay.
Or... pulling up another one here. Or Sports Clowns. Or the theme of this is pretty crazy. Witch Warrant Wrestling.
Witch Warrant Wrestling. Wow. Huh.
Anything Igloo Warfare.
Igloo Warfare. That might be interesting.
All right, so I'll stop on this one then. We've got Igloo Warfare. Oh, this is great, man. it's Igloo Warfare. The victory condition is you have to be the person to expand the most.
Okay.
The mechanics have to include secret unit deployment. And the constraint is, and this is the best constraint ever, it could be played with grandma.
Oh, wow.
So all right. I like this. This is fun. Igloo Warfare.
What about Grandpa? Can he play too?
I think he could, but Grandma has to be able to play.
Okay. Grandma's a requirement.
So my thought would that means that the rules need to be fairly tame, or the rules need to harken back to a game like a Pinochle or a Euchre, or something that Grandma would understand, right?
I don't even understand Pinochle or Euchre.
Pinochle is super complicated. Euchre is really simple, but you don't live in Michigan, so I can see why you don't know how to play it. Pinochle is complex.
Right.
It's fun. I've played it. I learned it in a college class, but it was...
That's a heck of a class.
The class was called Leisure Games, and literally we learned how to play shuffleboard, badminton, Pinochle, Euchre... I think something else too. I'm really good at shuffleboard though now. When I get old, I'm going to be amazing. So
was this class taught at an actual university or was it like at a community center?
It was a community college. So kind of half and half. It
gotcha.
Halfway between a community center and a university.
Gotcha.
It was a gym class. You had to take two physical ed classes, and one class had to be like a physical class, but the other one could be anything. And I was like, Leisure Games?
The other one could be a mental class.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. And it was. So, Igloo Warfare. So the first thing that pops into my head that would be kind of cool because of secret unit deployment would be if you had little igloo, plastic igloos, and then little pieces, right? And you had, say, two or three igloos, right? And you would put some pieces under one of the igloos when the other player's not looking, and then you would slide them out onto the board, kind of like that game that they play on the street corner in every movie you've ever seen, like follow the ace or find the ball in the cup,
right,
what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So kind of like that, like you'd put that out on the board. So if I would do that, and then you would have to react to it, but you wouldn't necessarily know where my pieces were. Right?
Okay.
So that's the secret part of the unit deployment. So you could strategize based on that, but that strategy, you know, might not work so well. I mean, I think expand the most is really easy, right? Because, like, if the board would be what, a map, you think?
Well, let me ask this: what are we thinking of as the core mechanism of this? Like, is it like a dexterity game? Is it like? Because I could see something along the lines of kind of similar to what you're saying, but just like, you know, player shields for keeping your resources hidden or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Having those be kind of the igloos that you would set out in front of your main base igloo.
Yep.
And you would have like dummy characters and real characters that you would hide behind the player shield igloos, and then you would have some sort of flicking mechanic or something to, you choose one of the igloos to knock down, and if you knock it down and there's a decoy there, then the player who made the attempt to knock the igloo down, they have to like lose a section of their base igloo.
That's fantastic. And, I love that.
And if they knock, if the flicker, we'll call them, if they knock over an igloo that has a real unit behind it, then you have to lose part of your base.
Yeah. I like that a lot. That, I think that fits really well. You could even have like the igloos, those little igloos you have could even be like some sort of block system to where you may knock some pieces over, but not all of them.
Right.
Oh man, I like that. I like that as a main mechanic.
Kind of like that. What is the name of that game? Cube Quest? Is it? Is that what it's called?
I've heard of the game Cube Quest.
I think it's like a two-player game where you're using the cubes or the dice to kind of build up your base, and then you're actually flicking the dice to knock down parts of the wall or something like that. I could be completely off base, and that may have been just a fever dream. I don't know. I think it feels like a dexterity game to me. My only concern then is it something that Grandma's going to be able to enjoy?
Well, depends. Would your grandma enjoy tossing stuff?
I don't know. What is the average grandma? What is her hand-eye coordination capabilities here? I mean, do we have to take that into account?
Well, I mean, the rules didn't say she had to be good at it.
Oh, all right.
Just that she had
to
play it. So,
okay.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
So she could be terrible at it.
Right, yeah. Maybe it's just, I was going to say maybe like dice rolling or something. So you're rolling the die at the igloo, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I really enjoy the idea of the igloo and that you're putting units behind some of them. So you're picturing it as you've got these little igloos that you're putting your units in, well, some of them.
Yeah.
And then you've got your main igloo that's getting destroyed when the... Or what if to make that be represented, what if your main igloo isn't an igloo, but it's your brick pile, right? Like, okay. Everybody starts with 20 bricks or whatever, 30 bricks.
Right, yeah.
And they're like your blocks of snow and ice. And you're putting those out onto the walls to defend them.
Okay.
But when people knock them over, then you have to keep replacing those, right? So that's how you eventually run out.
And if they knock out a block that had an actual unit behind it, then they're like, they were supporting it or holding it up or something, so it doesn't actually collapse. They can kind of put it back up real quick.
Right. And if they like completely break someone out, right? Like, I'm trying to think of how we could set it up so that if you knocked a piece off and it busted out someone behind it, then they could maybe capture that person.
Yeah. that might work better with the, like, the igloo screen thing. Because that, it's more, it's kind of more of a binary state at that point, whether, you know, if they hit the screen at all, it'll, you know, it'll definitely fall over. Once we figure out what we're actually flicking or tossing or whatever, but it's kind of straightforward that the igloo is going to fall. So it's just a matter of, did you pick the right one that I hid my spy behind or something like that?
Right. So that's a good point. So you're saying, because then if it was just, I have to try and knock it over.
Yeah, I'm kind of envisioning that you've got like five or six or whatever, how many igloos, and you've got an equal number of character pieces. And so you're putting a piece behind every single igloo, and only one of them or two of them or something is an actual, like, kid or something, and the rest are decoys. So right. you know that every single one of these has something behind it. You just don't know which one's the right target to aim for.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. So how does, okay, so one of the so the rule for how we win the game, though, had to be whoever expands the most. So how do we tie that in?
Okay, well, what if when you got a successful hit, instead of, we'll just invert it, instead of the person who got hit losing part of their, you know, their base or whatever, you actually steal that part and add it to your own base. And it's, you know, first one to get a base of, you know, X size wins. So you're actually, like, taking pieces away from your opponent's base.
Oh, yeah.
And adding it to your own.
That makes sense. So, really, you're just trying to drain the player, but you're expanding the most because you're expanding as you drain them.
Right.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
The only downside I see with that is you can get yourself into a real seesaw kind of scenario where you just keep, you know, sharing the same cue back and forth as you keep guessing right.
Right. So
but how... maybe what you do is you have different kinds of units. So you've got like, maybe you've got like a bombardier or something that has like bombs strapped to them, and if they hit the bombardier, they would still have to give up a piece of their base, even though they got a hit on you, or maybe they have to give up two. I don't know. I think there's something with having different powers for the different units. So maybe it's not just you have, you know, a bunch of decoys and one or two real units. You have like multiple real units that have different abilities.
That makes sense. Like, yeah. Like so knocking down the igloo is part of it, but using your units correctly to stop it or increase it also would manipulate the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Now, the next thought that just popped in my head, do we have just a single line of igloos that you're attacking, or do we have like multiple lines of igloos across the board between the players? And if, you know, at the end of each turn, any real units you have out that didn't get hit, you get to move them up a line.
Yeah.
So they're closer to the enemy base. It still kind of gets away from the expansion win condition, though.
Well, no, it doesn't, because, I mean, let me think, what if the board was set up as a circle, right? Or a, mm-hmm. Or maybe like a, maybe more like an ellipse. So it's just basically like two curves, like facing out from each other. And on one side, I've got my igloos lined up so I can see who's behind them, but you can't. Think of kind of like Stratego, right? Have you played Stratego before?
I have not.
Okay. So like the idea in Stratego is you've got all these pieces, they look like castles on one side, but on the back side, you can see what they actually are, right? But as you're moving the pieces back and forth, I can't see what your pieces are, no matter how close they are to me, and vice versa. So you can have those little igloos there to kind of cover who you're, who's there. But our igloos could be intermixed, right? Like, as we start to cross lines, I've got igloos closer to you than you have your own closer to you. So when you're throwing igloos, you're throwing things to hit my igloos, you might hit your own igloos.
Okay. Yeah.
So it would be important to find the right things to use for the pitching, like to actually tossing, to make sure they were the right weight, to where they weren't just decimating the whole board.
Yeah. You know? Well, I'm starting to waffle a little bit on the dexterity aspect. I could even see this just being like a card game. Like, you're just playing cards down, and, you know, your opponent gets to flip one of your cards every turn or something. And if they find an actual unit, then that unit's out. But otherwise, then the rest of your cards just kind of shift up closer to their end of the table.
Yeah. That makes sense too. Yeah, that is another very viable idea. That's what's cool about. So that's what I love about ideas like this, is that there are so many different ways to approach them. That you can come at. I like that.
And now it's like my brain is firing on all cylinders at this point. It's weird. So now I'm thinking about trying to emphasize the base expansion win condition. What if you're all fighting over a common pile of blocks? So you're trying to get your units up to the pile of blocks to be able to take some back to add to your base. And every turn you get to, you know, the other player gets to flick, or, you know, if you're doing the card thing, flip one over. And if they find a unit, then that unit has to go back to the base. So you're just trying to get up to, you're just trying to get up to the, you know, king of the hill kind of thing, trying to get to the pile of the igloo blocks so that you can bring it back to your base and add it to yours.
So at that point, some of the mechanics is kind of like the shell game, right? Like,
kind of, yeah.
On my turn, I could move two people forward.
Yeah.
And I could, and then I could, like, you know, say I have 10 cards across the way or something, and so do you. You could move two forward and then look at one of mine, right? So, So then it's, okay, is Chris trying to be smart and move forward his good pieces first, or is he trying to be sneaky and keep his good pieces back? You know what I mean?
Yeah, or you've got like two move actions. So you can move, you know, you can move one card, you know, moving a card one space forward counts as an action. Or swapping a card with another card out on the table, swapping its position, that's another action. Or maybe like, I don't know if moving backward would make any sense, but that could be another viable action. So you've got two of those. So you can choose if you want. You could push forward twice with one of your cards or one of your units, or you could, you know, just do some swapping shell game style to kind of confuse you or confuse people to say, oh, I think that's a guy, but now I can't, now I'm not sure.
And you could even have one of your units be like a specialty unit, like a, I don't know what, but something very bad, right? So if your opponent flips that unit over, it's bad news bears for them.
Right.
So that way, when you're moving your units forward, you know, they have to be like, you know what I mean? Like, when that, if that one gets to the end, it doesn't do anything for you. But
right, yeah.
If your opponent flips it, it's going to hurt them.
Right. Yeah, so that could be like the Bombardier thing where, like, if they get revealed, they toss a bomb or something at the base, and that player has to actually put a cube back into the stockpile.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I dig this idea the best out of the ones we've come up with so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the common stockpile of resources, because that gets back to the spirit of your main focus is to push up there to get the blocks to be able to keep building out your base, because you're trying to get a base of a certain size as a win condition.
Right. Yeah, I think that makes total sense. I think we go with that. I think that's the best idea so far.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sweet.
I feel like we did good here. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it only gets more fun, too, as you do it more. Like, because then you're like, I want to do it again. I want to come up with more cool ideas.
Are you telling me I just got a new addiction? Because I'm already addicted to buying these games. Now you're telling me I'm addicted to pitching them?
Well, maybe not yet. You might have got the bug. You never know. Maybe take some antibiotics or something to make sure.
Yeah, I'll have to pick up some pills somewhere.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, thanks again for being on the show. This was super fun.
I'm really honored to be here. You guys do some really great stuff on this podcast, and I'm just, you know, I'm a fan and a friend of you guys, and just, you know, glad I was able to help out.
Thank you. Hey, let's throw out your Twitter handle, which is it at the Kopech?
Yep, that's okay. It.
I've been following you for so long. I know you changed it, so I was like trying to remember if it's. Yeah. I thought that's what it was though.
I made the cardinal sin of changing my Twitter handle, so it's like whoa, people don't know me now.
You kept it close enough to where people would still figure it out. So follow Chris at the Kopech. He has a Twitter feed that is entertaining. So I encourage you to follow it. Thank you to everybody for listening to the show tonight. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can follow the podcast at podcastbtg. You can follow me at J.A. Slingerland. You could email us at buildingthegamepodcast.com. You could find us on Facebook and you could like us there. Wouldn't that be cool? Or you could go to iTunes. You could download us. And while you're there, you could give us a 5-star review and maybe say some sweet comments about us, too. That is always awesome. Keep coming back every week. And don't forget every other week to listen to Something from Nothing live Sundays at 8 p.m. or on Twitter. It's a good time as our Google Hangout show that we do with Chevy Dodd and also with TC Petty and lots of other game designers who are just interested in coming and hanging out with us. So make sure to check all that out, and we will see you again next week. Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Woohoo! I killed Chevy.